Osho, The Book of Wisdom, Volume 1. Discourses on Atisha's 7 Points of Mind Training. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 13.
Book 1. Abandon poisoned food. Don't be consistent. Don't make wicked jokes. Don't wait for an opportunity. Don't strike at the heart. Don't transfer the cow's load to the bull. Don't back the favorite. Don't have wrong views. Don't fall for the celestial demon.
The First Sutra. Abandon poisoned foods. According to the mystic traditions of the East, all that you think you are nothing but food. Your body is food, your mind is food, your soul is food. Beyond the soul, there is certainly something which is not food. That something is known as anatta, no self. It is utter emptiness. Buddha calls it the sunya, the void. It is pure space. It contains nothing but itself. It is contentless consciousness. Till the content persists, the food consists. The food persists. By food is meant that which is ingested from the outside. The body needs physical food. Without it, it will start withering away. It survives, it contains nothing but physical food. Your mind contains of memories, thoughts, desires, jealousies, power trips, and thousand and one things. That is also food. On a little more subtle plane, it is food. Thought is food. Hence, when you have nursing thoughts, your chest expands. When you have thoughts which give you energy, you feel good. Somebody says something good about you, a compliment, and look what happens to you. You are nourished. and somebody says something wrong about you, and watch as if something has been snatched away from you. You are weaker than you were before. Mind is food in subtle form. Mind is nothing but the inner side of the body. Hence, what you eat affects your mind. If you eat non-vegetarian food, you will have a different kind of mind. If you eat vegetarian food, certainly you will have a different kind of mind. Do you know this immensely important fact about Indian history, that India never attacked any country in the whole history of 10,000 years? Never, not a single aggressive act. How it was possible? Why? The same humanity exists here as it exists everywhere else. Just a different body created a different mind. You can watch it yourself. Eat something and watch. Eat something else and watch. Keep notes and you will be aware and surprised that each thing that you digest is not only physical. It has a psychological part to it. It makes your mind vulnerable to certain ideas, to certain desires. Hence, down the ages, there has been a search for a kind of food that will not strengthen the mind, but will help it to dissolve finally. Instead of strengthening the mind, that will strengthen meditation, no mind. No fixed and certain rules can be given, because people are different. And each one has to decide for himself. And watch what you allow in your mind. People are completely unaware. They go on reading everything, anything. They go on looking at the TV, any silly, stupid thing. They go on listening to the radios. They go on chattering with people. And they all are pouring rubbish into each other's heads. Rubbish is all that they have. Avoid such situations in which you are unnecessarily burdened by rubbish. You have already too much as it is. You have to unburden it. And you go on collecting it as if it is something precious. Time talk less, listen only to the essential, be telegraphic in talking and listening. If you talk less, if you listen less, slowly, slowly you will see a cleanliness, a feeling of purity, as if you have just taken a bath, will start arising within you. That becomes a necessary soil for meditation to arise. Don't go on reading all kinds of nonsense. Once I used to live in a house. The neighbor was a madman. He was very much interested in newspapers. He will come every day to collect all the newspapers from me. If sometimes he was ill or I was not at home, then he will come later on. Once it happened, for 10 days I was out, and when I came back, he came again to collect all the newspapers. I told him, but these are old now, 10 days old. He said, what does it matter? It is the same rubbish, only dates change. It must have been a very sane moment in that madman's life. Yes, there are insane moments in so-called sane people's life, and vice versa. He was saying a truth, that it is the same old nonsense. What does it matter? I have time and I have to remain occupied. I asked him what you did for these 10 days. He said, I was reading the old newspapers. I was reading them again and again and again. Leave few gaps in your mind unoccupied. Those moments of unoccupied consciousness are the first glimpses of meditation, first penetrations of the beyond. First flashes of no mind, and then if you can manage these two things, physical food which does not help aggression, violence which is not poisonous. Now even scientists agree with this, that when you kill an animal, he releases all kinds of poisons out of fear. Death is not easy. When you are killing an animal, out of fear, a great trembling inside, the animal wants to survive. All kinds of poisons are released. When you are in fear, you also release poisons in the body. Those poisons are helpful. They help you either to fight or to flight. Sometimes it happens in anger, You can do things which you could never have imagined that you can do. You can move a rock which you could not have even shaken. But the anger is there and passion is released. In fear, people can run so fast that even Olympic runners will be left behind. Just think yourself running and somebody with a dagger behind you to kill you. You will do the best that you can do. Your whole body will be geared to function at the optimum. When you kill an animal, there is anger, there is anxiety, there is fear, there is death facing. All the glands of the animal release many kinds of poisons. Hence, the modern idea is, before killing an animal, make him unconscious. Give him anesthesia. In modern butcheries, anesthesia is being used. But that does not make much difference. Very superficial difference. Because at the deepest core, where no anesthesia can ever reach, death has to be encountered. It may not be conscious. The animal may not be aware what is happening, but it is happening like in a dream. He is passing through a nightmare. And to eat meat is to eat poisoned food. Avoid anything that is poisoned on the physical plane. Avoid anything that is poisoned on the mental plane. And on the mental plane, things are more complicated. If you think you are a Hindu, you are poisoned. If you think you are a Mohammedan, you are poisoned. If you think you are a Christian, a Jaina, a Buddhist, you are poisoned. And you have been poisoned so slowly, that you have become attuned to it. You are addicted to it. You have been spoon-fed from the very first day. From your mother's breast, you have been poisoned. All kinds of conditionings are poisons. To think oneself as a Hindu is to think against humanity. To think oneself as a German, as a Chinese, is to think against humanity. Is to think in terms of enmity, not of friendship. Think only as a human being. If you have any intelligence, think yourself only as a simple human being. And when your intelligence will grow a little more, you will drop even the adjective human. You will think yourself only as a being. And the being includes all the trees and the mountains and the rivers and the stars and the birds, the animals. Become bigger. Become huge. Why are you living in tunnels? Why you are creeping into small, dark, black holes? But you think you are living into great ideological systems. You are not living in great ideological systems because there are no great ideological systems. No idea is ever great enough to contain a human being. The beinghood cannot be contained by any concept. All concepts cripple, paralyze. Don't be a Catholic and don't be a communist. Just be a human being. These are all passions. These are all prejudices. And down the ages you have been hypnotized for these prejudices. They have become part of your blood, your bones, your very marrow. You will have to be very alert to get rid of all this poisoning. Your body is not so much poisoned as your mind is poisoned. The body is a simple phenomenon. It can be easily cleaned. If you have been eating non-vegetarian foods, it can be stopped. It is not such a big deal. And if you stop eating meat, within 3 months' time, your body will be completely free of all the poisons created by non-vegetarian foods. It is simple. Physiology is not very complicated. But the problem arises with the psychology. A Jaina monk never eats any poisoned food, never eats anything non-vegetarian, but his mind is so polluted, so poisoned with Jainism as nobody else is. The real freedom is freedom from ideology. Can't you simply live without any ideology? Is ideology needed? Why ideology is needed so much? It is needed because it helps you to remain stupid. It is needed because it helps you to remain unintelligent. It is needed because it supplies you ready-made answers and you need not find them on your own. The real man of intelligence will not cling to any ideology. For what? He will not carry the load of ready-made answers. He knows that he has intelligence enough. So whatever situation arises, he will be able to respond to it. Why carry unnecessary loads from the past? What is the point of carrying it? And in fact, the more you carry from the past, the less you will be able to respond to the present. Because the present is not a repetition of the past. It is always new. Always, always new. It is never the old. It may sometimes appear like the old, but it is not old. There are basic differences. Life never repeats itself. It is always fresh, always new, always growing, always exploring, always moving into new adventures. Your old ready-made answers are not going to help you. In fact, they will hinder you. They will not allow you to see the new situation. The situation will be the new and the answer will be the old. That's why you look so stupid in life. But to remain stupid seems cheaper. To be intelligent needs effort. To be intelligent means you have to grow, and growth is painful. To be intelligent means you have to be continuously alert, aware. You cannot fall asleep. You cannot live like a somnambulist. And to be intelligent has few more dangers too. To be intelligent is very difficult because you have to live with the stupid crowds. To live with blind people and have eyes is a dangerous situation. They are bound to destroy your eyes. They cannot tolerate you. You are an offense. Hence, Jesus is crucified. Socrates is poisoned. Al-Hillas is killed. Sarmad is beheaded. These were the most intelligent people that have ever walked on the earth. And how we have behaved with them. Why? A man of the intelligence of Socrates has to be killed. He became intolerable. His presence became such an offense. To look into his eyes meant to look into the mirrors. And we are so ugly that rather than accepting the fact that we are ugly, the easier course is destroy the mirror and forget all about your ugliness and start living in the old dream again that you are the most beautiful person in the world. We destroyed Socrates because he was a mirror. Hence, people have decided it is better to remain mediocre. It is better to remain unintelligent. Just the other day, I was reading a report. Few psychologists of England have discovered that by the time great politicians reach to the highest posts, their intelligence is already withering away. Just think of a man of 84 becoming a prime minister. Those psychologists have warned the whole world that this is dangerous. People who have gone beyond 60, 70, 80, they become prime ministers, presidents. This is dangerous for the world because they have so much power and so little of intelligence left. But those psychologists are not aware of another thing that I would like to tell you. In fact, people choose them to be prime ministers and presidents because they are no more intelligent. People don't like intelligent persons. People like people who look like them, who are like them. They feel not strangers. Intelligent people will be strangers. I can't think any country who can choose Socrates to be the prime minister. Impossible. He is so different. His approach to life is so different. His insight into things is so deep. No country can afford, or no country can be so courageous to make him a prime minister. Because he will bring a chaos. He will start changing each and everything. Because each and everything needs to be changed. This rotten society has to be destroyed completely. Only then a new society can be created. Renovation is not going to help. We have been renovating the same old ruins for centuries. No more props, no more renovations, no more whitewash. All that is needed is demolish it and let us create a new society. Let us bring a new human being, Homo Novus. Let us give birth to something new, a new mind, a new consciousness. People choose dull, dead persons in power because you can be safe with them. Now, India is very safe with Morarji Desai. He is not going to do a single thing. He will keep everything intact. He will keep this country's ugly bureaucracy as it is. He will not change anything. His whole effort will be how to stop change. Jayaprakash Narayan was thinking to bring a total revolution. And what has happened is total failure. Countries choose mediocre people in power because they will save their tradition, their convictions, their prejudices. They will protect their peasants. They will, instead of destroying them, will enhance them, strengthen them. It is certainly dangerous to have unintelligent people in powerful posts. And it is becoming more and more dangerous because they have more and more power and less intelligence. But why it happens? There is a certain logic in it. People don't want to change. Change is arduous. Change is difficult. If you change your poisonous foods, you will be surprised. A new intelligence will be released in you. And this new intelligence will make it possible not to go on stuffing yourself with nonsense. This new intelligence will make you capable of dropping the past and its memories, of dropping unnecessary desires, dreams, of dropping jealousies, angers, traumas, of dropping all kinds of psychological wounds. Because you cannot drop psychological wounds, you become victims of psycho-fraud. The world is full of psychoanalysts of many kinds. They come in all shapes and sizes. The world is full of all kinds of psychotherapies. But why so many psychotherapies are needed? They are needed because you are not intelligent enough to heal your own wounds. Instead of healing them, instead of opening them to the winds and to the sun, you go on hiding them. You need psychotherapists to help you to open your wounds to the sun so that they can be healed, so that they can be allowed to heal. But it is very difficult to find a real psychotherapist. Out of 100 psychotherapists, 99 are psychofrauds, not psychotherapists. You will be surprised to know that more psychotherapists and psychoanalysts commit suicide than any other profession. The number is almost double. Now, what kind of people are these? And how they were going to help? And what they were doing their whole life, helping people? More psychoanalysts go mad, insane, than any other profession of the world. The number is almost double. Why? And they were helping people towards sanity. And they themselves were insane. There is every possibility they became interested in psychotherapy because of their insanity. It was an effort to find a cure for themselves. And you will be surprised that psychotherapists of one kind go for psychotherapy to other psychotherapists of another kind. The Freudian goes to the Jungian goes to the Freudian, and so on and so forth. This is a very strange situation. If intelligence is released in you, you will be able to do all that is needed. You will be able to heal your own wounds. You will be able to see your own traumas. You need not go to a primal therapist. I am allowing all kinds of therapies in this commune. In fact, in no other place in the world, so many psychotherapies are available. 60 in all. Why I am allowing these therapies? Just because of you, because you are not yet ready to release your intelligence. As the commune will go deeper and deeper, into inner realizations. Therapies can be dropped. When the commune has really bloomed, there will be no need of any therapy. Then love is therapy. Intelligence is therapy. Then living day to day, moment to moment, aware, alert, is therapy. Then all kinds of things that you do during the day, cleaning and cooking and washing, they are all therapy. Therapies are here only for the time being. The day I become convinced that now the major part of you has gone beyond therapies, therapies will disappear. Because then the major part will be able to pull the minor part also into intelligence. We are trying to create an intelligent kind of life. I am not so much of a religious person. I am not a saint. I have nothing to do with spirituality. All those categories are irrelevant about me. You cannot categorize me. You cannot pigeonhole me. But one thing can be said, that my whole effort is to help you release the energy called love intelligence. If love intelligence is released, you are healed. And the third kind of poisoned food is spiritual. That's what the self is. The self needs continuous attention. It feeds on attention. Attention is its food. It is not only the politician who hankers for attention, more and more attention of more and more people. Your so-called saints are doing the same. There is not a difference between the saints and the politicians and the actors. No difference at all. Their basic need is the same, attention. More people should pay attention to me. More people should look up to me. That becomes food for the ego. And that is the subtlest kind of poisoned food. These three things are implied in the first sutra. Atisa says, abandon poisoned food, physical, psychological, spiritual. Let your physiological body be pure of all poisons, toxins, and your mind unburdened from all kinds of rubbish, junk. And your soul free from the idea of self. When the soul is free from the idea of I, you have arrived to that inner space called no self, anatta. That is freedom, that is nirvana, that is enlightenment. You have come home. Now there is nowhere to go. Now you can settle rest, relax. Now you can enjoy the millions of joys that are being showered upon you by existence. These three poisoned foods dropped, you become empty. But this emptiness is not a negative kind of emptiness. You are empty in the sense that all poisons, all contents are gone, but you are full. Full with something which cannot be named. Full with something which devotees call God. Atisa cannot use that word. He is not a devotee. He is not a bhakta. He cannot call any word for it. He remains completely silent about it. He said, drop this, drop this, drop this, and then whatsoever remains is you, real you. And the second sutra is a very, very significant sutra. Don't be consistent. Have you ever heard anything like that? Don't be consistent. When you will hear it for the first time, or you will read it for the first time, you will think there has been some mistake, maybe a proof mistake or something. Because your so-called saints have been telling you just the opposite. Don't be inconsistent, they say. Be consistent. It is here where Atisa is superb. He says, don't be consistent. Why? What is consistency? Consistency means living according to the past. With what you will be consistent? If you want to be consistent, you can have only one reference. That is the past. To be consistent means to live according to the past. And to live according to the past is not to live at all. To live according to the past is to be dead. Then your life will be just a repetition. To be consistent means that you have already decided that now there is no more to life, that you have already come to a full point, that you don't allow life to have anything new to give to you, that you have closed your doors. The sun will rise, but you will not allow it rays to enter in your room. And the flowers will bloom, but you will remain unaware of their fragrance. The moons will come and go, but you will remain stagnant. You have stopped being a river. A river cannot be a consistent phenomenon. Only a pond can be consistent because it is non-flowing. The flow, by its very nature, has to be inconsistent because it has to face new situations, new challenges, new spaces are constantly coming upon it. It has to respond spontaneously, not according to the past. The consistent man is a logical man. His life is one-dimensional. He lives in arithmetic. he follows logic. If anything goes against logic, he simply avoids seeing it. He pretends as if it is not there because it is so disturbing to his logic. And a logical man is the poorest man in the world. Because life consists not only of logic, but of love too, and love is illogical. Only a very small part of life is logical, the superficial part. The deeper you go, the more and more you move into the illogical. Or, to be more right, the supralogical. The logic is good in the marketplace, but not in the temple, not in the mosque, not in the church. The logic is good in the office, in the shop, in the factory. Logic is not good when you are with your friends, when you are with your beloved, with your children. Logic is good when you are dealing in a business-like way. But business is not all life. There is something far more valuable in life than any business. Allow that too. A professor of philosophy went to a doctor and asked for advice how to improve his sex life. "You seem to be in good physical condition," said the doctor after an examination. "You run 10 miles a day, every day, for 7 days, then phone me." A week later, the professor telephoned. "Well," said the physician, "has the running improved your sex life?" "I don't know," said the professor. "I am 70 miles from home now." This is the way how a logical mind functions. It is one-dimensional. Life is multidimensional. Don't confine it. Don't make it linear. Don't live like a line. Live the multi dimensions of it, the multi phases of it. And then you cannot be consistent. Because life is paradoxical. One moment it is joy, another moment it is sadness. If you are very consistent, then you have to go on smiling. Whether your heart is crying or smiling, that doesn't matter. You have to be consistent. You have to be a Jimmy Carter. You go on smiling. I have heard that his wife has to close his mouth every night. Because in the night also he goes on smiling. If you practice such a thing the whole day, naturally, how can you relax so suddenly in the night? It becomes a fixed pattern. Life consists of sadness too. And sadness is also beautiful. It has its own depth, its own delicacy, its own deliciousness, its own taste. A man is poorer if he has not known sadness. Impoverished, very much impoverished. His laughter will be shallow. His laughter will not have depth. Because depth comes only through sadness. A man who knows sadness, if he laughs, his laughter will have depth. His laughter will have something of his sadness too. His laughter will be more colorful. A man who lives life in its totality is a rainbow. He lives the whole spectrum of it. He cannot be consistent. He has to be inconsistent. Atisa is giving you something tremendously valuable. Live all the moods of life, they are your own. And they all have to contribute something to your growth. Don't become confined to a small space. Howsoever comfortable, cozy it looks, but don't become confined to a small space. Be an adventurer. Search and seek all facets of life, all aspects of life. It is said that you cannot write a novel about a good man. And that is true. A good man really has no life. What novel you can write about him? At the most you can write a character certificate that he is good, and that is his whole life. He has not much of a life because he has not multidimensionality. Live and allow all that is possible. Sing, dance, cry, weep, laugh, love, meditate, relate, be alone, be in the marketplace and sometimes in the mountains. Life is small. Live it as richly as possible and don't try to be consistent. The consistent man is a very poor man. Of course, the society respects the consistent man. Because the consistent man is predictable. You know what he is going to do tomorrow. You know how he is going to react. He is manageable. He can be easily manipulated. You know what buttons to push and how he will act. He is a machine. He is not truly a man. You can put him on and off. And he will behave according to you. He is in your hands. The society respects the consistent man. The society calls consistency character. And the real man has no character. A real man is characterless or beyond character. A real man cannot afford character. Because character can be afforded only at the cost of life. You renounce life, you can have character. If you don't renounce life, you will have many characters, but not character. If you don't renounce life, how can you have a character? Each moment, life is new, and so you are. Society will not respect you. You will not be a respectable citizen. But who cares? Only mediocre people care about the respect of the society. The real person cares about only one thing, whether I am living my life or not, whether I am living it according to my own vision or not. It is my life. I am responsible towards myself. The most important responsibility is not towards the nation, or towards the church, or towards anybody else. The real responsibility is towards yourself. And that is that you have to live your life according to your own light. That you have to move wherever it leads. Without any compromise. The man of character compromises. His character is nothing but an effort to guarantee the society that I am not dangerous. To declare to the society that I will follow the rules of the game. That I am utterly at your disposal. The saint has character, hence he is respected. The sage has no character, hence it is very difficult to recognize the sage. Socrates is a sage, Jesus is a sage, Lao Tzu is a sage. But very difficult to recognize, almost impossible, because they don't leave any trace behind them. They don't fit in any molds. They are pure freedom. They are like birds flying in the sky who don't leave any footprints. It is only for very few sensitive souls to find a sage as a master. Because the mediocre follow the saint. Only the very, very intelligent people attune themselves with a sage. Because the sage has no character. He cannot fulfill any of your expectations. He is bound to offend you. He is bound to disappoint you. He is bound to seek you and shatter you in many, many ways. Slowly, slowly, he will make you as free as he himself is. And now, the third sutra, the most dangerous. I have been really worried about it. Don't make wicked jokes. What is a wicked joke? First, I will have to tell three. Just to explain. And three, because three is a very esoteric number. The first. With a buzz and a beep and a whir, a strange spaceship descends to earth. Two bizarre creatures emerge and float to the ground. They are a young Martian couple, both scientists, here on an exploratory visit. They decide that the best way to find out about Earth is to communicate with some of the inhabitants. So off they bounce in search of some likely candidates. They enter an apartment building in the mysterious way Martians have of doing these things, and settle upon a newly wedded couple by the names of Everett and Gladys Sprinkle, honest. Well, Everett and Gladys are as surprised as could be, but quickly adjust in that special way newlyweds have of adapting to startling surprises. With one thing and another, the talk finally ends up on the subject of reproduction. The Martian male astounds the Sprinkles by offering to demonstrate the way people reproduce on his planet. Before they can protest in their embarrassment, he grabs the Martian woman, places the 8 chubby fingers of his single hand on her forehead, and while he sparkles and she twinkles, an opening appears in her side and a tiny baby Martian hops out and starts prancing around Everett and Gladys's living room. The Martian male then asks them how it is done on Earth. They hem and haw a bit and finally decide that it would be too difficult to describe. So in the interest of interplanetary cooperation, they take off their clothes and give a demonstration. The Martians watch their performance enthralled. When it is all over, the Martian woman asks, "When will the Earth child come out?" Gladys shakes her head and tells her that it will take 9 months. The Martians are amazed at this, scratch their heads a bit, and then the male asks, "But if it is not coming out right now, how come you were both so excited towards the end?" The second. The man went to see his doctor because he was feeling under the weather. The doctor asked the usual questions, such as, had the man been drinking or eating too much? "No," said the man. "Well, perhaps you have had too many late nights," queried the doctor. "No," the man replied. The doctor thought about the problem for a while and then asked, "Much sex?" "Infrequently," came the reply. "Is that two words or one?" And the third. A woman walked into a supermarket to buy some broccoli. She went up to a man in the vegetable department and said, "Sir, do you have any broccoli?" The man replied, "No, ma'am, none today. Come back tomorrow." A few hours later, the woman was back again, asking the man, "Sir, do you have any broccoli?" "Look, lady, I already told you We don't have any broccoli today. The lady left only to return again the same day. By this time, the man was exasperated and said, "What does T-O-M spell in the word tomato?" She replied, "Tom." "And what does P-O-T spell in the word potato?" he asked. "Pot," was the reply. He then said, "And what does F-U-C-K spell in the word broccoli?" She looked puzzled and said, "There is no fuck in broccoli." He sighed a deep sigh and explained, "Lady, that is what I have been trying to tell you all day." I don't know whether they are wicked jokes or not. But one thing is certain, Atisha would have enjoyed. In fact, by wicked jokes, he means something totally different. He means, don't say anything against somebody. Don't hurt somebody. When he is not present. Don't hurt somebody at his back. The translation is not exact. Atisha's whole meaning is, don't gossip about people with a deliberate intention to hurt them. Because that is not really a joke. That is not fun. That is not humor. Atisha can't be against the sense of humor. It is impossible. No man of his intelligence, awareness, can be against the sense of humor. In fact, it is people like Atisha who have given the best religious humor to the world. Just as Atisha has come from the same lineage, the Gautam Buddha's tradition, so have come the Zen people. And Zen is the only religion who has accepted humor as prayer. It is not possible at all, that Atisha had no sense of humor. Then the sutra cannot be really against jokes. It is against hurting people. He is talking, he is going deeper into the psychology. He is going in the rationale of the joke. What Sigmund Freud did after 1,000 years. Sigmund Freud thinks when you joke about somebody, there is every possibility that you are aggressive, that you have anger, that in a vicarious way you are pretending to be humorous. but really you want to offend. But that cannot be decided by anybody else from the outside. Only you can be the judge. If there is a deliberate effort in your mind to offend somebody, to hurt somebody, if it is violence disguised as humor, avoid it. But if it is not violence, but just pure sense of humor, the sense of fun, the sense of not taking life seriously, not taking life too seriously, then there is no problem. If I meet Atisha someday, I am going to teach him few jokes. And my feeling is, he will enjoy it. Jokes can be just pure humor, without any violence in them. Even though sometimes, on the surface, one may think there is some violence. But the point is not what others think. The point is, what is your intention? It is a question of intention. You can smile with an intention to offend, then smiling becomes a sin. Anything can become a sin if deep down the desire is that of violence, and anything can become virtue if deep down there is a desire to create more joy in life, more laughter in life. My own understanding is that there is nothing more valuable than laughter. Laughter brings you closest to prayer. In fact, only laughter is left in you when you are total. In everything else, you remain partial. Even in love making, you remain partial. But when you have a really heartfelt belly laugh, your total being, physiological, psychological, spiritual, they all vibrate in one single tune. They all vibrate in harmony. Hence, laughter relaxes, and relaxation is spiritual. Laughter brings you to the earth, brings you down from your stupid ideas of holier than thou. Laughter brings you to reality as it is. The world is a play of God, a cosmic joke. And unless you understand it as a cosmic joke, you will never be able to understand the ultimate mystery. I am all for jokes. I am all for laughter. Atisha has been wrongly translated. What actually he means is, don't be violent, even in your words. Even while joking, don't be violent. Because violence breeds more violence. Anger will bring more anger. And it creates a vicious circle that has no end. The fourth, don't wait for an opportunity. Because the opportunity is now. The opportunity is here. So those who say that we are waiting for opportunity are being deceptive, and they are not deceiving anybody else but themselves. The opportunity is not to come tomorrow. It has already arrived. It has always been here. It has been here even when you were not here. Existence is opportunity. To be is the opportunity. Don't wait for an opportunity. Don't say, tomorrow I will meditate. Tomorrow I will love. Tomorrow I will have a dancing a relationship with existence. Why tomorrow? Tomorrow never comes. Why not now? Why postpone? Postponement is a trick of the mind. It keeps you hoping. And meanwhile, the opportunity is slipping by. And in the end, you will come to the cul-de-sac, the death, and there will be no more opportunity left. And this has happened many times in the past. You are not new here. You have been born and you have died many, many times. And each time the mind has played the same trick and you have not yet learned anything. Atisa says, don't wait for an opportunity. Don't strike at the heart. He says, criticize people's minds. Criticize their ideologies. Criticize their systems of thought. Criticize everything, but never criticize anybody's love. Never criticize anybody's trust. Why? Because love is so valuable. Trust is so immensely valuable. To destroy it, to criticize it, to in any way shatter it is the greatest harm one can do to anybody. Mind, you can criticize, should be criticized, but not the heart. Whenever you see something of the heart, prevent the temptation of criticizing. Just the opposite is the case with people. They can tolerate your ideology. They can tolerate your mind, but the moment they see your love, your trust, they jump upon you. They cannot tolerate your trust. This is too much. They will say, this is hypnosis. You have been hypnotized. That you have been deceived. That you are living in an illusion. That love is madness. That love is blind. Logic has eyes and love is blind. The truth is just the opposite. Logic is blind. Criticize it. Love has eyes. Only love has eyes. Because only love can see God. Criticize beliefs. Because beliefs are nothing but doubts hidden behind beautiful words. Criticize beliefs, but don't criticize anybody's trust. And what is the difference? Trust has the quality of love. Belief is just a rational approach. If somebody says, I believe in God, because these are the proofs for God, then criticize him. Because proofs can only prove the belief. But if somebody says, I love God, I don't know why. Simply, I love God. I am in love. There are no proofs. In fact, there is every proof against him. Still, I love God. Remember the famous statement of Tertullian, a great Christian mystic. Credo qua absurdum. Somebody asked him, why do you believe in God? He said, because God is absurd. Because God cannot be believed, that's why I believe in God. Everything else can be believed. Only God cannot be believed. But in believing that which cannot be believed, one grows. That is reaching for the impossible. So whenever you see somebody in love, somebody in trust, avoid the temptation to criticize. It is easy to criticize. It is easy to throw poison into somebody's love affair. But you don't know. You have been destructive. You don't know. You have destroyed something of immense beauty. You have thrown a rock on a rose flower. Don't transfer the cow's load to the bull. People are always finding escape goats. Because they cannot answer the strong person, they take the revenge on the weak. There is a story about Mulla Nasruddin. He was in the court of a great king. He was the jester of the court. He said something very funny, but the king felt offended. He slapped Mulla Nasruddin. Now Mulla also wanted to slap him back, but that was risky. That was dangerous. So he slapped the man who was standing by his side. The man was taken aback. He said, what are you doing? I have not done anything to you. And Mulla said, why you are arguing with me? You can slap the other man who is standing by your side. The world is big. By the time it returns back, we will see. You just let it go on. Pass it. That's what people are doing, actually doing. It is not a story. The husband has been humiliated by the boss. And he comes and is angry at the wife for no reason at all. Or maybe he finds a reason. Reason can always be found. They are so simple to find. There is too much salt in the vegetables. Or the chapati is burnt. Or something. Or anything. He will find a reason. He will convince himself that he is angry because of this reason. But the reality is, he is angry at his boss. But the boss is a powerful man to say anything. Can be dangerous, he may lose his job. So he smiled when the boss was insulting him. He went on wagging his tail. Now, he is projecting the boss on the wife. If the story is happening in the West, then the wife can also jump on him. But if it is happening in the East, the wife cannot do anything. In the East, husbands have been telling the wives that husbands have to be treated as gods. The wife cannot say anything. She will have to wait for the child to come back from the school. And then she will do whatever she wanted to do with the husband. She will beat the child. The child is late. Again the clothes are torn. Again he has this and that. Again he has been playing with wrong boys. And what the child can do? He will go in his room. Beat his toy or destroy his toy. This way it goes on sifting. Atisha is saying, please don't sift things. Otherwise, your whole life will be just sifting and sifting. Take the responsibility. Take the risk. Respond to the situation, whatsoever the cost. Don't transfer the cow's load to the bull. Don't back the favorite. Don't have likes and dislikes. Be just. Be fair. Don't decide by your prejudice, by your liking and disliking. Just decide the case on its own merit. And your life will have the beauty of truth. Your life will have the strength of truth. Don't have wrong views. All views are wrong. Life should be lived without views. Life should be lived in immediate contact with reality. But if it is not possible, then at least don't have wrong views. What are wrong views? Views which are rooted in prejudice, hate, anger, greed, ambition, violence, The first thing is, don't have any kind of views. Live life without a philosophy to live it. Philosophy is not needed to live life. And the best life and the most glorious life is the life which is lived without any philosophy. Simple, innocent, spontaneous. But if it is not possible right now, then start by at least dropping wrong views. Don't live through prejudice. Don't live through anger. Don't live through hatred. Don't live through greed, ambition. Don't live through dreams. Be a real, more real, more realistic. Be a little more alert, watchful, watching each act cautiously. Because each act creates a chain of actions. Whatsoever you do will remain in the world even when you are gone, because the chain will continue. If you cannot do something beautiful in the world, at least don't do something ugly. The highest is to live without any views, just to live. Just to be. The second best is, at least drop the negative part. Follow the positive. And slowly, slowly, you will see, if you can drop the negative, the positive can also be dropped. In fact, to drop the negative is more difficult than to drop the positive. The person who can drop the no can easily drop the yes. Because the no is more ego strengthening than the yes. The person who can drop anger, hatred, greed, can easily drop the positive feelings. And to remain transcendental to all dualities is the ultimate goal of Atisa and of all the great masters. And the last sutra, don't fall for the celestial demon. The ego is called the celestial demon. Remember constantly, each moment of your life has to become a constant remembrance that the ego is very subtle and it has very cunning ways to come back again and again. It follows you to the very last. It hopes to the very last that you will be trapped. Beware of it. This ego is called in Christian, Mohammedan, Judaic scriptures, the devil. It is your own mind, the very center of your own mind. Just try a few moments in the beginning to live without any eye. You are digging a hole in the earth in the garden, just dig the hole. Just become the digging. And forget that I am doing it. Let the doer evaporate. You will perspire in the sun. and there will be no doer. And the digging will continue, and you will be surprised how divine life is if the ego can disappear even for a single moment. Taking a shower, just let the water fall on you, but you don't be there as an I. Relax. Forget the I. And you will be surprised. The shower is not only cooling your body, it cools your innermost core too. And if you search, you will find so many moments in the ordinary life, every day, when the ego can be put aside. And the joy is so great that once you have tasted it, you can do it again and again. And slowly, slowly, you become capable of putting it off, unless it is absolutely necessary. And then that day of blessing also comes when you know it is not necessary at all. You say the final goodbye to it. The day the ego dies, you have reached to the point of no self. That is your real being. Non-being is your real being. Not to be is to be for the first time. Enough for today.